Episode 2, What's So Tricky About Protecting Reefs? Welcome to our podcast, Stand Up for Reefs. My name is Kate Holden, and today we will be talking about why coral reefs are so tricky to protect. I'll be joined by Dr. Emma Camp, who is a marine biologist working with the Future Reefs team as part of the Climate Change Cluster at the University of Technology, Sydney. Emma and I are going to talk about why reefs need protection and also how people listening can get involved with standing up for reefs. Before we meet Emma, let's talk about the status of reef protection and why this should or could matter to you at home. What makes coral reef ecosystems so hard to protect? Can't the government just pop some laws in place and voila? Firstly, it's worth pointing out that some countries and some governments are extremely proactive about protecting reefs. Marine Protected Areas, or MPAs, are a good example of this. They highlight areas that are sensitive or ecologically important and reduce human impact. Where the CCMI research station is based in Little Cayman, which is a remote island about 80 miles off the coast of Grand Cayman, the local government has had progressive MPAs in place since the 1980s, and they have recently upped this to 46%. Much of this MPA includes coral reefs, as they are often in shallow waters or fringing the islands. The Cayman Islands has increased their MPAs because the previous amount of protection, which was only 24%, was having a diminishing effect. Now, this is really interesting. The key here is Cayman felt that they needed to increase their MPAs because they were not effective enough. Just hold that thought for me. So as we talked about in the first episode, there is one global ocean and 25% of all marine species are dependent on reefs. Many iconic species, and that means they're super important for ocean health, and also to culture, like sharks, tuna, turtles, and fish larvae all connect our oceans and our reefs, migrating or just floating along until they arrive at their next port of call. Whilst we humans may carve up the ocean and our coasts into countries and continents using map delineation, ocean animals and plants do not. So whilst local protection has some benefits, the reality is we need to protect the reefs from a more global view. Currently, less than 7.5% of the ocean is protected by MPAs, and that's according to the UN's World Database of Protected Oceans. Now, there is a goal to increase protection, which has been spearheaded by the UK, via the UN and the Convention of Biological Diversity, who are two of the biggest global entities who take care of global natural resources. And this goal is to increase MPAs to 30% by 2030. This is quite a big ask. If we think back to the Cayman Islands and their recent move to increase their local MPAs to 48% because they felt that it's really needed, the 30% global goal doesn't really seem that big a step. But in reality, this is a huge change to go from 7.5% to 30% of the ocean, which is 70, you know, the ocean is 70% of the world. And it will take a lot of political will. And where there is politics involved, people and their opinions matter. And therefore, you and your opinion matters. There is a lot of pressure on coasts and human numbers are growing. Billions of people live close to the ocean or depend on the ocean for food, transport and leisure. So development, pollution, overfishing, all this creates a tough time for reefs. And when you overlay climate change and warming oceans, it can feel overwhelming and perhaps to some a bit distant. Interestingly, in Little Cayman, where the CCMI team work, our reefs are still relatively healthy, which we monitor and we can quantify this over 20 years. And that indicates that reefs can adapt to warmer oceans, but where there is limited human impact. So we know coral reefs can thrive, ocean health can improve where we humans, you know, consider the impact that we are having. Today, we are here to connect you to coral reefs, to help provide some insight into what Emma and the team she works with are doing to further understand reefs. And we will also talk about why reefs are important to everyone and how anyone, anywhere can help.
Okay, so today we have got Emma Camp. Hello, Emma.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Okay, can you tell us where you are today and what it is that you do?
So I'm in Sydney, Australia, and I'm a coral biologist based at the University of Technology, Sydney. And my specific research interest is on corals that have natural tolerance to stress, particularly ocean warming.
Oh, wow. That's we will get into some detail about that because it is quite unusual and super interesting. But first of all, what do you love about the ocean and coral reefs?
For me, I think what I love about the ocean is that there's just so much that we still don't know about it. There's that kind of level of mystery. And anytime you go in the ocean, you're never quite sure what you're going to see and what's down there. And for coral reefs, the fact that they are just so beautiful and diverse, and it's got like an underwater city with all of these fish and sharks and life going on. But the fact that you can't see it from above the water, you know, it's just fascinating to me.
A secret world.
Yeah.
Super secret. So I have actually, Emma and I have worked together before. And so Emma is in Sydney, I'm in the UK, and we've worked together in the Cayman Islands. So I know that you've been diving for a long time and you've always been passionate about it. So did you know from a youngster that you wanted to work in this area?
So I always loved the idea of it. So I have pictures actually from when I was in primary school, and I drew that I wanted to be a marine biologist, but I hate to say it that I was definitely under the illusion that that was like working at SeaWorld, because that's all that I knew at that age. And I hate to say it because it's like, you know, it's just the worst. But I think, you know, again, it's back then, you know, there weren't a lot of scientists that I'd, you know, seen in the media, let alone female scientists. So I really didn't know what that job could be. And it wasn't until I was older that I actually got to kind of have some work experience and some internships and realized that, okay, this is actually a job that I can do and that I want to do.
You can do. Yeah. How old were you when you learned to dive?
14 when I did my
job. It's pretty young. And actually also then, I mean, it's a bit more kind of common now, not that you're super old or anything, but you know, in 20 years or so, that's quite you know, that's quite young to learn. Did you learn to like dive with your dad?
No. So this was the other weird thing, was that my dad had problems with his ears. So he was the one that first took me snorkeling, but he couldn't dive. And then my mum wasn't really one much for the oceans at all. And so it was just something that I just really wanted to do. And they were supportive of, but neither of them came with me. I just went off on my own with the instructor, and that was that.
No way. Oh, well, that's amazing. Well, fair play to your parents for being open-minded and supporting you. I think that I was reading something the other day about the autonomous relationships with parents and their children. This is about ocean, pro-environmental ocean behavior, and that the more autonomous parents are, the more likely that children are going to grow up to be, you know, superhuman beings. So that's
cool.
Interesting. Please, yeah, sorry about the small hound in the background, he is huge. So what has drawn you to researching in Australia?
Well, the Great Barrier Reef being the, you know, largest coral reef on the earth, as a coral scientist, kind of a dream place to work. And I think just the sort of speed at which research and conservation is evolving here in Australia, I think it's really setting a pace for other areas around the world. There's lots of, you know, amazing science going on globally, but I think Australia for some areas is really at the forefront of that. And I think that is because it's such an icon for Australia. So yeah, for me, it's a real awesome place to be and work.
And also do you do the majority of your work on the Barrier Reef? Great Barrier Reef.
Yes, we do. But interestingly, we also do some work in Sydney because we are seeing corals move south. So we are actually seeing some tropical corals start to come in to Sydney Harbour. So we do have work also going on there. But for me, mainly up on the reef.
So that's really interesting. So in the first podcast, I was talking to Dr. Gretchen Goodbody Gringley, who is our research director, and her work is on the acclimatization of corals, and she is going deeper. She's a tech diver. So that's super interesting that corals are moving into Sydney. Is that because of the cooler waters?
Yeah, so we're seeing changes in the ocean currents, and obviously it's cooler as you move southwards. So we're seeing them coming.
Wow, who knew? Yeah. Who knew? It's amazing where they keep moving around to. Yeah. So you study future reefs. So what do you feel are the main challenges for people that don't know, who aren't working in your field? What are the big challenges for reefs right now?
So corals have lots to contend with, unfortunately. So the biggest one is the impacts of climate change. So the oceans are getting warmer, they're getting more acidic, they're getting lower oxygen. And then on top of that, you've got local stressors. So that might be invasive species, pollution, over-exploitation, depending on where you are. So collectively, there's a lot that they are having to deal with. For me, I particularly focus on the impacts of climate change, because that's something that corals universally, wherever they are having to deal with. And so my interest is really trying to understand, are there some corals that are better able to survive what they're going to have to survive in the future? And if so, where are they? Why are they better able to survive those stresses? And how can we maybe take that knowledge from them to help reefs on a more broader scale?
Cool. That's I think that some of the things that particularly to do with climate change, people worry about that it's really technical. And whilst it can be, you know, for people that are maybe many miles away from reefs, what could they do? What could they do to help?
So I think before answering, I guess what they could do to help, I think it's good to think about why they should even care. And I actually have this conversation with some of my friends in the UK, like, oh, we don't have, you know, tropical reefs, so you're like, they're nice, but you know, so what? So, you know, why are reefs like important in the first place? Well, I mean, so a lot of the chemical compounds that are in pharmaceuticals, for example, come from something that is on a coral reef, and we're still discovering a lot of those compounds and what they are. So if we're losing reef quicker than we're discovering these benefits, that's something that obviously feeds directly into, you know, our health and well-being.
Yeah.
Massive source of protein for communities around the world. A lot of fish stocks fundamentally rely on reefs for their survival. Climate regulation, and then a lot of countries actual like storm protection, so they stop their countries from eroding. And actually, you know, for many of the poorest people around the world, it's their kind of livelihood that they rely on. And so for us, you know, maybe in Europe, where a reef isn't right there, if countries that are reef neighboring countries lose that reef and have flooding, lose their food source, that will have a massive impact on the economy on a more broader scale. And you can start to see scenarios where you get climate refugees and people actually having to move to other places. And you can see how that would affect stability. And we would feel those impacts in Europe as well as those countries. So
there's
lots of reasons why we should care. And that just the fact that they're amazingly, you know, beautiful, diverse. And, you know, if you can get a chance to see it, or, you know, even look at them online and see pictures of them, you know, you can see why they're so easy to fall in love with. At least I might be biased, but you know,
I am too, so I agree.
Yeah. And so I guess, so with all of that in mind, I think given the stresses that they have, and I guess back to your first question is, what can people do at home? You know, one of the easiest things is anything that can reduce your carbon footprint is going to have a direct benefit to the reef, and not just to the reef, but nature more broadly. So that's a, you know, an even bigger bonus. But, you know, driving our car less, eating less meat, you know, recycling, reusing our clothes, like all of these things that we hear about. And I think people sometimes question whether or not that can actually make a difference. But again, if everybody starts to do those things, they can. And importantly, you know, those of us that have the privilege to vote need to ensure that we're voting in people that are taking climate action seriously. And that we hold people accountable. You know, governments have made commitments. You know, COP26 is around the corner. So that's where the governments will get together and talk about their climate strategies. And we need to keep them accountable to ensure that they're representing our future in the best way.
Yeah. So I think what's really interesting, and this is quite a personal question. So you have a small person in your life. And I don't know about you, but when I had my small people, it really did change for me in terms of the consideration for the future generations. Whilst I was definitely aware of it and empathetic towards it, I almost had a slight sense of panic when I actually had small kids, who I suddenly thought, this is going to be a real problem for them. And they, you know, we all spent a lot of time watching sci-fi films, or, you know, the future being this weird, you know, pod, because we've trashed the universe. But actually the reality is, if we don't do something, that it's going to be a very different future for them, and corals in particular. So, you know, I work with quite a few people who say, you know, what we see today, it just won't be there. But I think from a lot of the work, or a lot of people that I interact with, there is a lot of hope. So it's not all doom and gloom. People shouldn't feel that, you know, oh dear, it's the end and there's nothing I can do and I can't make a difference. And, you know, what difference does it make what I do at home? And the answer is, you can make a difference, and we can hopefully protect these corals. Is what from your perspective is the most effective? So I think communication between science and people is possibly one of the most strongest forums for generating certainly concern, but hopefully also action. You are actually a UN Young Leader of Sustainable Development Goals and a Time Magazine's Next Generation Leader. I remember you were probably one of the first people, and bear in mind, so Emma and I worked together nearly 10 years ago, maybe less. Oh, that's making me feel old. And I remember you saying to me, when you were quite young, a bit of a whippersnapper, and you said, I don't just want to do science, Kate. I want to make sure that the science reaches people so everybody has the information to make a difference. And you were quite young to be thinking about that. And you were also very unusual in your field. Now science is definitely, you know, the communication aspect of it is much stronger. It can't just sit in a peer review on a shelf. So tell us about your international roles and, you know, what it means for you and what you have to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, what you said before, and it's funny because it's always been something passionate to me, because I just think if people don't know what the problems are, what the solutions are, then why are we doing it? So, you know, that has always been something that, like you mentioned, that I'm passionate about. And so through it was a call online from the UN to say, is anybody doing something that they feel, you know, is contributing to the Sustainable Development Goals? So there are 17 goals that the United Nations put together to help us try and leave the world a better place in 2030 than where we have been coming from. So that's there, and there's a series of goals from below water to land to climate, gender equality. It covers everything. And so I was lucky enough to be picked as one of the 17 young leaders during the second class. There's a few different classes now, and I think you're up to the third. But what it's meant is that I've had the opportunity to go to the UN General Assembly, to the UN Climate Summit, and actually communicate the research that I'm doing to heads of state, also to other young people, to the media, and to try to actually engage with people more at a top-down level, to say, you know, this is why we as younger people care about this. And if you're under 35, you're still counted as a young person by the UN, so I hold on to that
clearly.
It's been a really great platform to communicate in avenues that I wouldn't have probably had access to as a science, you know, if I'd stayed purely in a science role. It has meant I've sort of moved into a science advocacy role, and that's not something I necessarily envisioned that I would end up in, but I think it is necessary. And I think that having people that understand the problems and can talk, you know, specifically to what they're working on and why that is, you know, why climate action is needed, for example, for coral reefs as a case study, is so important for leaders to hear from the science. It doesn't get diluted down in the process. So that's been something that's, you know, really exciting, and something that's continuing, and just providing opportunities to try and expand the number of people that understand what's going on and why we need people to care about primarily climate action.
Well, super interesting, because I think, you know, and one of the points of this podcast is that coral reefs, protecting coral reefs is tricky, isn't it? It's such a complex and, as you say, unknown in many ways area that the more people who at least understand the fundamentals, the better. I have one more question. I think in terms of what do you think the biggest challenge? So the next kind of 10 years, I know climate change is the big, you know, it's on the agenda and hopefully we will start to reduce our reliance on carbon, but it's not going to, there will be a lag, won't there? And there are other things that are also into place. So what, you know, on your longer term, what are your main concerns about reefs?
But so the big sort of challenge for us is to buy them time to get everything to where we need it to be. So the way that we kind of, as a science community, are starting to think about this is that we have sort of, we need a toolbox of approaches to try and aid coral reefs and ensure some of them survive in the future to then reseed, you know, the rest of the reefs. That's our goal. So the biggest tool we have is obviously mitigating, you know, and addressing our reliance on fossil fuels. But there's lots of other tools that we can have in that toolbox. And that's things like assisted evolution. So can we actually try to assist the way that the corals naturally evolve to boost their tolerance, naturally tolerant corals, restoration practices, like all of these different things are now being considered to try to give them the best chance to survive and actually boost its natural resilience to these stresses that will continue, unfortunately. And as you said, there'll be a lag time while the oceans re-equilibrate, even if we were to stop our, you know, fossil fuel emissions tomorrow. So I think the biggest challenge for me is going to be the scalability of the processes that we're currently trying to implement, and that will ultimately determine how successful we can be in terms of trying to conserve reefs into the future. And I think that's something where lots of people can actually contribute, because it's kind of at a point now where it isn't just the scientists that are needed to come up with these solutions. We need engineers, you know, we need designers, we need arts and media to communicate the problem. You know, we need everybody from different sectors pulling together to try and actually come up with those solutions to scale to a level that can have social impact, but can actually have an ecologically beneficial impact on the systems that we're trying to conserve.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. It really is such a wide and diverse problem, and not only in identifying the issues but also in finding the solutions, because it just crosses into pretty much every avenue of everybody's lives. And I think that probably should be the biggest hook for anybody that wants to help ocean protection or even environmental protection, by saying actually you really do matter. I think for me that's the most important message I have for anybody. Whilst you might not live next to the Great Barrier Reef, or you know, or even have the privilege of spending much time swimming around them or diving with them, you can make a difference, and we are super reliant on them. So I have a little quiz for you, and it's only little, and it is supposed to be some fun. And actually, I had a small person design the questions for you, so it is highbrow. People always say, well, I think it's really interesting we have you on. So, and literally, so some of these questions are from Alexander, age 7. And he says, number one, what is your favorite coral?
Oh, my favorite coral. So I'm going to say my favorite coral is a branching coral called Acropora millipora. And it looks like little orange sort of fingers that come out. And the reason I like this one is that it's a really like biologically important coral, but it's also a really resistant one, and one we're finding in some really hostile environments. So it gives me hope. So that's why that one's my favorite.
And his next question was, what's the best dive you've ever had?
Oh, that's a tough one. Best dive. I just love all of my dives. I think probably I think probably one of the best dives was on that very northern outer reef of the Great Barrier Reef, and just seeing some really amazingly diverse and still very healthy coral. And that was probably, and it after there had been quite a lot of stress, so it was really kind of optimistic to see that was still there,
that it was still going.
What's
your favorite sustainable food?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, I'm not saying it's a specific sustainable food, but we've been instead of having our like meat burritos, we've been doing some like bean veggie ones, and they're actually really good. So I think that's probably our most enjoyable substitute. And so this is actually something that a lot of people ask me, like, oh, are you vegetarian? I said, I'm not, but we've significantly cut down our meat consumption. And I think that, again, is going back to what everyone can do. And we're not saying you have to go vegetarian and cut out, but if everybody yeah. cuts a few meals out, it can make such a big difference.
Huge difference. Interestingly, yeah. I've had this conversation a lot recently, and I think Seaspiracy has prompted it, which I don't know if you've seen, but it's, you know, the overall messaging is super interesting. I think it's very accurate. Obviously, there was some, you know, some dramatization that possibly needs some fact checking, but I also think moving into, you know, everybody shifting into avocados. Obviously, avocados in Australia, which are local to you, avocados in the UK, you know, are not. And so I think there is a super fine balance, and just be sensible. But the reliance on protein, yeah, I think we've done exactly the same thing. We just eat a little bit less, which also I think we're feeling the benefits of, you know, on a dietary perspective as well. So there we go. We have got okay. Do you have a favorite shark? Now I'm going to give a small preempt to this, because my young son does actually know about a dive trip that you did. I'm pretty sure there was a very beautiful large shark who has a similar name to you. Do you remember? Emma the lemon shark.
The lemon. Yeah. I was trying to think. I was like, what?
They still ask me about that. Go on.
Oh, that's funny.
You can answer your actual favourite shark and not
my actual favourite shark. Well, I would say that my favourite shark would be, I would say a hammerhead, but it's also been the elusive hammerhead that I've yet to see. So I've missed a hammerhead on so many dives where everyone else has seen them. And I typically, because my head is stuck in coral looking at it, and everyone's like, oh, did you see the hammerhead? No, I did not. I saw the coral that I was looking at. But I would still say it's my favorite, and I hope one day to see one.
Do you know, I'm exactly the same. Honestly, all those dives, I worked as a dive instructor for a while. Yep. And every time I got on the boat or was helping a student with something, a hammerhead would, you know, fly by. And I'm the only one that hasn't seen one on thousands of dives. And everyone else is like, oh, it was massive. It's amazing, Kate.
Yes. I feel your pain.
So my final question for the quiz is, so I think animals, particularly marine animals, is something that people really identify with. And in terms of, the polar bear has obviously made a very strong, in terms of climate change, he frames the messaging. Do you have, what would be your marine animal that would do the job of the polar bear?
Oh, that's a good question. I would love to say coral, but unfortunately I feel that people still mistake it for a rock, algae or something, so they don't get that quite emotive sense with it. Good question. I want to say like a turtle or Nemo without his home. I feel like everyone's quite attached to Nemo, so I feel like
it's very beautiful,
you know. And the fact that the anemones can kind of bleach similar to coral, so maybe I'll go with Nemo. That could be
I didn't know that. Who knew? I mean, obviously,
they've got some plants as well
out of their home. Well, there you go.
That could be the one. I'll go with that.
Excellent. All right, well, that is it. Thank you very much.